Hey, Shelley.
Hi, Megan. Welcome back to this episode of Cream City Dreams,
the podcast where we interview incredible Milwaukee women. And we have yet another incredible Milwaukee woman. Today's dreamer, Shelley Julia Taylor, who is the former president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee. Before that,
the president of the YWCA Greater Milwaukee.
I didn't say this in the interview, but I feel like if you looked up powerhouse and
big wig
connector, big wig, you know, you would find her name in the dictionary because she has just gotten so much done in Milwaukee. And, you know, we don't talk a lot about the specific things that she did get done in Milwaukee in this episode because there is so much out there. And we will link to all of that in our show notes. So if after listening to this episode, you're like, I need to know more, we will have all those links in the show notes. But it was just so fascinating to talk about how she did it and how what the important things along that, along her trajectory of building all of these things for our city, what supported her.
How'd she handle setbacks?
Obstacles, yeah. And dealing with so many different factions in our city and bringing them together to make change.
Yeah, there's some real gems in this.
Yep.
All right, well, on with the show.
Julia Taylor.
I want to start this by just thank you for being here. You were recommended to us by a listener.
Oh, great.
And I didn't know your name. I was like, oh, okay, well, look her up and read about her. And as I was reading about you, I was like, well, she has touched my life in countless ways without me knowing it. So most, the YWCA Racial Justice Program is one that I was such a blessing in my professional life because I was doing personal work around racism and undoing racism, unlearning racism. And in my community of professionals, I was working in Catholic ministries. I wasn't seeing that happening. And it was like, people, we need to do this. And here's this thing that's Milwaukee focused and that's in community with people from all the sectors. And there were so many different lay Catholics in it. In the one I went in, it was just this great opportunity. And so I think it's 5 or 6 years later, we still have some programs that we're doing because of that.
See, oh, great.
Yeah, great. Yeah. So that's one way. And then I was a part of an organization that needed to rebrand, and we were having a really hard time finding somebody who was working for us in terms of who was really getting our culture. And then we connected with the Commons. And we got an intern from the Commons, Liv Menzia, who was actually on our podcast too. And she did a beautiful job of rebranding. And it was like a 100% positive change for the organization. Yeah. So those are a couple ways. But for our listeners who don't know you, we'd love to hear. And the Milwaukee Magazine had that great article about you in 2021, was it?
Right.
And so that really recaps your career. But just for listeners who haven't had the chance to deep dive in your life, right? And for this, for whom this might be the first introduction to you. And so if you were at one of your dinner parties and a stranger, you know, somebody that you invited brought a stranger and they said, well, tell me about your life and career. Who are you? How would you answer it?
Well, I would say that, you know, I kind of grew up in a small town in Indiana, which had its blessings and as well as some curses occasionally. I went to Ball State University, so I kind of stayed in Indiana for the first part of my life. And then after I graduated from Ball State and I got a degree, I started out as an art major and wound up not being able to pass a design course. And it was a prerequisite. And so since I was on scholarship, I had to change my major. And of course, I went to one that would really lead me to a great career. I was an English and philosophy major with an art minor. So that was kind of my college background. But then when I got married and we moved to Bay City, I had a daughter and was kind of looking at trying to get into the labor force. It was in the 70s, late 70s, and it was a tough time. Unemployment was pretty hard. So I actually wound up starting working in fast food and worked at McDonald's in local store marketing. They had just started that program. And where I was, there were a lot of company-owned stores. So it actually was a great education. I worked there for 2 or 3 years, and I had a great boss. I learned a lot on the operational side, but I learned a ton on the marketing side and the budgeting side. During that time, I stayed very active as a volunteer. And I guess that's one piece of advice I've always given younger leaders is don't wait for somebody to tap you on the shoulder to lead. You know, look for the opportunities where leadership's needed and then volunteer, step up. Because nobody will come and tap you on that shoulder. It just doesn't happen like that. And so, you know, I was active actually with a domestic violence women's shelter at that point. And we had kind of, and I was chair of the board, a very young chair. I didn't really know what I was getting into. But at that point, we were housing women in people's homes, which was not the safest place for everybody to do. We knew we needed a physical shelter. And we went to United Way because we were United Way funded. And United Way suggested that we merge with the YWCA. And so my board was not crazy about the idea, but we, in good faith, started discussions. And during that time, the woman who was executive director of the YW got married in her mid-60s and decided to retire. And so there was a vacancy, and the board I was with for the women's shelter urged me to go for the YW job. And I thought, they will never hire me. I'm, you know, in my late, you know, late 20s, I've never ran an agency. I've never even been in the YW until I went in to talk to them about the possible merger. And at the end of it, I got hired, which was a big shock to me.
Wow.
But part of that was because I did know how to read big budgets from my days at McDonald's, and I had a leadership position on a board, even though I didn't see it in that way. They saw it as that way, and they wanted somebody younger. And I was also so young that I really, you know, I could say things I wanted to be done, which, you know, might be difficult and preposterous, but I thought, why, you know, this is what should happen, right?
Yeah.
And so I got hired in there, and I was very fortunate that there was a statewide loose association of YWs and women who kind of took me under their wing. And I still have a lot of friends from those days. I still have a group of my friends from the YW that I've been out of the YW for 22 years now. But we get together every year and do a trip together.
So,
you know, the YW was a really formative time for me. I learned so much. I had so many good friends, so much support, a great national organization for training. And then I had a good, strong local community. So I was at that YW for 10 years and then got recruited to come to Milwaukee. And at first, I also dabbled in politics a little bit. I got appointed to a common council because this was in the early 80s, and unemployment was in Michigan at that time. If you recall, Flint was in a terrible shape, Lansing and Saginaw. They had lost so many of the automotive plants. Unemployment was in the 20s, like 21% in Bay City. And half the common council left. They moved elsewhere for jobs. And so there were a bunch of appointments to the common council, and I served there for a year. And then I was on the school board for a year. I still, when I look at it, I wasn't 30 yet.
Wow.
And I got, when I just had turned in the third, I was probably mid-30s when I came to Milwaukee, and I came to that position and got hired away, and it was a total rebuild at the time I came here. We had a site in the Grand Avenue Mall, and we were in the Plankington building, and we had a budget of about $400,000. We had 24 staff, and they'd sold a building, so they had $1 million in reserves, but when that was gone, YW was gone, and through, you know, a number of fortunate things and a really strong board. Also, that big focus on racial justice, which I learned, you know, at the YW in Bay City, that was a huge focus for us, and certainly with the national YW. And there were always excellent trainings available, but we really focused this YW on it. It was very appropriate for Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee had a lot of racial healing to do. and a lot of racial learning to do too. It's a town that's like so many old industrial towns, has always been divided. It was a town of immigrants and migration, which also created both physical clustering, but also social and economic clustering.
Yeah.
And the last great migration up here of African Americans from Alabama and Tennessee, you know, at one point in the 70s, Milwaukee had the highest per income amount for African Americans in the country. And then, you know, today it's one of the lowest. Because during that industrial time, there were lots of jobs, and it was the opportunities were open for people to buy homes, to buy a boat, to buy a cabin, to put their kids through college. And unfortunately, that only lasted for a generation or two before we saw the big industrial losses. And and Milwaukee really became kind of a place where people were stuck in place. So then from that, I went to the Greater Milwaukee Committee. And again, that was kind of a surprise because I was, one, somewhat younger. I was also, you know, I was in my 40s. I had, I was a woman. I came from a nonprofit. It's a CEO business leadership organization, even though it's a nonprofit and focused on improvements in the community. So you know, I would say my life's been one of kind of sometimes surprising, but being willing to go for it, but then being surprised a lot of times when it happens.
Yeah, our podcast is about dreams. And so I'm just curious, where did dreams fit into this life journey for you?
I think I've always been fortunate because I think a lot of my dreams really in other years have been more about how do you create better places for people? How do you create better opportunities? And I've been fortunate that I've been able to act on a lot of those and act in coalitions and collaborations to make it happen. None of this happens by any single individual. But I would say I've been fortunate to be, and I think the other thing is, whether I was at the YW or I was at the Greater Milwaukee Committee, I've always had great teams of people to work with. And I've always enjoyed that. You know, the people that I've worked with, I've often stayed friends with. You know, and they're people who are willing to take risks and get out there and make changes. And I've always tried to create the space for people to create their own dreams and be able to follow those dreams. And whether it's they need access or they need support or they need resources, that part of my role in life is to try to make sure that I can help them find those.
Yeah, as I'm thinking of it, our season, we are in season four. We really should have had you on season three, which we called our Dream Makers. Mm-hmm. We had, who I think are probably friends of yours, Cecilia Gore.
Oh, yeah,
was
right.
On Wendy Bauman from Wibbick. You know, lots of people like yourself who are connecting people around the city, in some cases of these leaders, women specifically. But it's interesting, as I'm listening to you talk, and this is front of mind for me because I've been working on a pitch deck for our podcast, which I just learned what that was. I'm a Gen Xer. So basically a PowerPoint presentation because we want to level up and we would like to see this grow so we can elevate these voices. And so I was putting together, you know, what are the lessons that we've learned over the four seasons? And I feel like in just the 10 minutes we've been on this call, you've already exemplified half of them, you know, just
really?
and we see it repeated over and over with our guests. Start before you're ready and just say yes. No experience is wasted. So that your experience at McDonald's and the experience on the boards that you were just starting out, you know, as you're beginning your career. And then the whole idea of collaboration, surrounding yourself with a good team, and then paying it forward. Like these are all things that the people that we've had on this show have really exemplified and consistently said across episodes, which is just
That's great.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Cecilia Gore was my board chair when I was at the YWCA for many years. And also a very good friend. I always say our claim to fame is that we had Cecilia and Randy over one time for dinner, and this is where they met. in the house at one of our dinners. And, you know, a year later, they were engaged. So that was exciting.
Well, that's dreamy.
That's, so
that's really cool. And
Wendy, I actually hired Wendy into WBIC because it was I was on the board of WBIC, and it was for a while a part of the YW. I just had dinner with Wendy about a week ago.
Oh,
and
how
we
fun.
Were catching up. So,
well, and I'm wondering if Corey Jo Biddle is somebody that you know from
Fuel.
Yeah. But that's a part of the greater Milwaukee. Metropolitan Milwaukee
Association of Commerce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't keep it all.
So many acronyms.
But we collaborate quite a bit.
Right. Lauren Feaster from Professional Dimensions has been on too. And I'm guessing that these are all like the company you keep, right?
Right.
So, you know, I like Megan, I'm astounded at the number of lessons that keep coming back up from guest to guest. And I live in this world as a woman. And a woman who tries to take leadership in different places. And there's often times that I run into, you know, real difficulty with people not willing to lead the way that it sounds like you've led. And like so many of these other women, where it's like, make a seat at the table, create opportunities for people, collaborate. So I'm really interested in knowing what were the hard won lessons that you learned around that experience of being a woman leader, really trying to move an agenda forward of creating opportunity for more and more people.
Yeah, I would say that overall, in coming into the GMC was different, you know, being a woman. I will say that the leaders that I met there from the companies and the nonprofits and the foundations, the universities, were very, very accepting and very supportive and willing to do kind of go beyond the call to ensure that I had the access and the support to get things done. I did learn a lot about how important it was to build those coalitions of, even if it were members of the GMC. We did a lot of work by committee because people needed to come along at the same pace, and the solutions had to come from the group. The things that were the hardest to do were things that were one-off, that were somebody's idea that was really trying to push it forward, and there wasn't anybody behind them. You had to have a group of people that wanted to make it happen, particularly if you wanted to have it sustainable. One of my favorite sayings is that change occurs at the speed of trust. And so whether it's working, you know, we spent probably 2 years, Tim Sheehy and I did, working with the seven counties to form Milwaukee 7, even to get to the name with that had Milwaukee in it. And it took, you know, working together on some things we could get done to, you know, kind of figure out how the relationships worked and what we all brought to the table. But it also took just building that trust and, you know, creating that culture. And once you build that culture of trust, you can get a lot of things done.
Yeah. And key to trust is just relationship, right?
Right. And I will say, sometimes being a woman at the table, I would, you know, there is that old stereotype, and I think it's a true one, where you'll say something and people kind of nod, and then 10 minutes later, a guy will say the same thing and people go, oh, yeah. And that's what gets recorded and reported. Mm-hmm. And it's never really bothered me that much. But I do notice that that is a thing out there, and I don't know why it's a thing, but it's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My 10-year-old said to me recently, Mom, I don't understand why men think that they know more than women when none of them would be here if it weren't for women. I was like, oh, honey, yay. You're picking up what I'm laying down. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing, though, is, you know, I think you really have success when nobody remembers whose idea it was.
Yeah.
You know, Bud Selig one time kind of told me this story about what his definition of change is. So the first stage is everybody says that will never work here. The second stage is we tried it years ago. It didn't work then. It won't work now. The third stage is when everybody says it's the best idea we ever had. So the key is to kind of keep pushing through till you get to that third stage.
Yeah. Amen.
That's beautiful. I love it. Thank you.
You know, and I learned some other things too. Like we worked for a number of years to try to get regional transit authorities established. We did actually get them through the legislature. We just never got funding for them. And then the legislature shifted and they actually were taken out of legislation. But we were really trying to get the commuter rail extended from Kenosha up to Milwaukee and into Waukesha. And which would have been, I think, a huge economic driver for this place because it's a much cheaper way to get to, there's a lot of jobs in Northern Illinois. It's a lot cheaper way to get there than taking Amtrak. And then you also have a lot of transit oriented development around the track. So we worked for a number of years on that and getting it through the legislation was really tough. And we worked hard. We tried to get a sales tax through and thought we had it in the last minute. Kind of ran out of days of session. Anyway, we did. We kind of failed on that one. And I was very down in the dumps for probably like 3 or 4 months afterwards. It was a big failure, you know? I mean, should have gotten it done. And I was sure that I was never going to get anything done legislatively again. Well, then later we did some other legislation. And what I found was, and this was maybe 2 years later, was that the relationships we built and the fact that we were willing to fight to the wall for it really mattered to people there. So the second piece of legislation, which I thought was going to be pretty tough, wound up not to be so tough. And it was because we had formed these relationships. So I, you know, I kind of walked away from that with the knowledge of just because you lost a battle doesn't mean that the whole thing is over with. And how you end that battle is really important. I mean, afterwards, you know, we still thank people. We still recognize people. We didn't walk away with our heads hung in shame. We sort of said we fought a really good battle. I couldn't think of anything else we could have done differently at the end of the day. And so, you know, I think it's important to kind of celebrate your failures and realize that there are side benefits that come out of that. Because I will tell you, if you really want to accomplish big things, you will fail. And the key thing is to look at it as what you learn from it and what you build from it. Because if you don't ever want to fail, then just don't do anything. Just sit on the sidelines.
Right.
And second guess. That's always a good spot people are feel very comfortable in.
Yes.
Or plan it. Plan. Keep planning. Like stay in that planning phase.
Right.
Where, you know, you don't get implemented. You don't get anything started. You know, we've definitely heard that from folks that like, you've got to start and take that courageous step. So I'm curious what supported you in like even rising from that funk to continue getting things done.
You know, one thing that happened to me the day after when I was super depressed Jim Doyle was governor and he called me and said, you know, you lost this one, but the battle's not over and you're going to be back again. And I've lost a lot of battles too. And don't give up on this. And, you know, it meant a lot that he took the time to call and, you know, cause we were up till 6 a.m. with the legislature that night and then driving home. And it was, and he must've called me about 9 or 10 in the morning and that meant a lot that he was willing to do that. And, you know, it also made me think about then how the other people that had worked with us felt. And because everybody was there. And so, it was that was an important moment. He's always been one of my favorite governors. So
I'm curious maybe going back even to your Indiana, how growing up, where did the relationship building, where did that start? Did you have a teacher in your life that or a figure in your life that kind of implanted that idea of the importance of relationships and connections?
Well, I grew up in a very small community. I went to a school that until my junior year had 100 students in it. So, you know, my class probably had 10 kids in it. And, we all lived by each other. Our families knew each other. We'd all, you know, some of the families had been there from the founding of the town. And then I had a pretty tight-knit family, too, on both my dad's side and my mother's side. But, you know, my best friend growing up in Indiana, who was Kathy Legg, is now Kathy Kroll, is still one of my best friends. We get together. I'm going to go see her in March in Boulder. And we've stayed in touch for years and years and years. So, you know, we formed some long-term relationships there. But, you know, we always were like a gang of kids in the summertime. We lived in the country, but we were always kind of hanging out together, getting in trouble together, getting out of trouble together. And I think that contributed to it. We never really had, we were always together, always running around together. You know, when the pigs got out, we all got together and got the pigs in. When
I grew up in a similar community and on a farm, and there it really is something about that freedom of movement. And, you know, you get into, there's some real life skills that are built there around, you know, tenacity and teamwork for sure in those small town communities.
And I think I was fortunate too, because I went to Ball State to college. And they had some specialized dorms that they set up, as well as a program. I was on the honors program. So that, and in honors English, was a small group of people. And we took classes together and all. We did, we actually had a poetry magazine we all published, and readings we did. So I was fortunate that there were always these small groups of people in things that I was, that sometimes were institutionally created. For a while, it was my second year of college. I lived in something that was called the French House, which was all French speaking. Don't ask me how I got into it, because my French was very poor. But but it was a great experience too. There were probably eight kids in the class, in the house, along with a woman from France who ran it. So, you know, I've just always had these fortunate opportunities to be in these small settings where you have to work with everybody. And I enjoy working with people. I enjoy making friends and having relationships.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the one article that I did read that I wanted to ask you about was these dinner parties. So is this something that you've always done on the side, or is this something
Not
new?
Always. I mean, we've always kind of had parties and stuff. But when I got into the GMC, actually, there was a gentleman named Peter Mahler, who's still active in the community, who kind of took me aside, and he said, and he had these little dinner parties, and he said, you know, this is the, says a lot of discussion and things happen at these dinners. And so actually Peter kind of helped me even figure out how to do them. And, cause there's a thing to them. And so, I all through the years tried to have, dinner parties of usually no more than 12, usually 10 people. But sometimes it would be because of projects we were working on. Actually, when we moved into our house, the house we're in now 20 years ago, was when Jim Doyle had first become governor. And some of his staff had reached out and asked if I would be willing to have some dinners for him to meet some of the business community here. And so we had set dates for two dinner parties. We were still getting this house done. And, you know, I will say the guys who worked on the house, I mean, the last 2 weeks they went full bore to get this house done. So it would be ready for, because I said, you know, we can always go to the university club for the governor. We don't have to have it here if we don't get everything done. And even the weekend before, his security detail came over to see the place, and we were hanging pictures and cleaning dust off the stairs. And they were like, is this where the dinner's going to be? It'll be fine. It'll be fine. The funny thing was, when he first came, was we had these ugly doorbells up over an inside door in the house, and they just were hideous. And I said, I want those down, take them down. So they took them down. Well, little did we know that this continued the doorbell at the front door. And so my partner, Stieg, is running downstairs, and he comes upstairs. He says, I think the governor's at the front door. And this is at 5:30 and the dinner's at 6:30. Well, I'm fortunately dressed, and I come downstairs and he's there. And I'm like, oh, hi. And he says, I'm sorry we're late. And I said, well, actually, you're a little early. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. He says, well, we'll take off and we'll come back. And I'm going, no, you can come in. We have hors d'oeuvres. We're ready. And he's like, no, I actually have something to do. I'm going to come back here at 6:30. And he took off. I thought, oh, shit, I hope he comes back. And, you know, we had a chef and we had all that kind of taken care of. So, and then, so I was ready. So then at 5:45, some Mary Burke showed up with her father, John, because she was a new cabinet secretary at that point of commerce. And then we started having CEOs showing up at 6:30, and then at 6:35, the governor came. So it was all fine. But it was sort of like that. So soon after that, we got the doorbell reconnected.
Oh, and at these dinner parties, I mean, you say there's a thing to them. Are they orchestrated, or are they just, do people just come and chat with you? Or do you do any sort of games or?
Well, Shel Lubar taught me about the Jeffersonian table. So we do try to do that where you don't have the table breaking into groups. You actually have one discussion at the table. And I do try to break it up a little bit in terms of, because, you know, there are some people that are certainly a little more conversational than others, and make sure that we kind of scattered them among the table. It always helps when you know the people that are coming. And then also, you know, not to always have them be so serious, but to have them be fun. Sometimes you ask a question, you know, kind of like, tell me, you know, what was your key experience for you growing up, you know? And we did that at one dinner party, and it became the, I was so poor when I grew up dinner party, you know? And it was interesting. All these guys who'd been successful in their lives talking about how they had one pair of dress pants that they shared with their brother.
It's
hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so fun. I'll have to remember that. That I like to throw parties and gatherings, and I do often bring an icebreaker, and I need to come up with a new word, because icebreaker just makes people shudder.
Just ask a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Can tell about something about themselves. That's,
yeah.
Work well.
Mm-hmm. I'm aware that you are an artist.
Yes.
And it sounds like since retirement, you've really, you know, been focusing on that.
Yeah. I continued sort of a small art practice over the years.
You did. Okay.
Yeah, I was always a sketcher. And actually, when I was in high school, I used to make a living sketching both portraits at county fairs, but also I would do drawings for the newspapers, illustrations for the newspapers. Mm. And then, of course, I went to college. And after I had my little break with, unfortunately, not being an art major, I still had to support myself in college, and I formed a stained glass business. Stained glass was big then, the Tiffany lamps.
Yeah.
And where I lived in Indiana, there was a factory that made stained glass in Kokomo, not very far away, the Opalescent Glass Factory. So I had easy access to glass. So I kind of taught myself stained glass through library books, because they really didn't have YouTube back then. And you could learn it. And learned how to make it. And, you know, if I made a lamp a month, it paid my rent. But I did a lot of windows. I actually have a window back in the back there. You can kind of see it from my college days. And made store windows and that kind of thing. And so that kind of got me through a couple of years of college. You know, I'll make 110 kites in one weekend for a sorority or that kind of thing. It was, but it was still art. Still kept my hand in it. And then, probably now about, would be about 9 years ago, I went to Palm Springs for a birthday, and my best friend and I then, who's unfortunately passed on now, Mary Louise Mousseline, and I decided to take an art class, and our spouses and partners decided to go climb a mountain in 100-degree heat, and we weren't into that, so we took an art class. And it turned out to be a watercolor class. So we had to get all these supplies and everything. And we continued to paint the whole time we were up there. And then we painted after that. And I really got into watercolor. And of course, you know, by that time, YouTube was a thing. So there was a lot of videos out there, and started taking lessons. And then, this would have been during COVID. So it must have been about 2020. Jeff and Sarah Jarris got in touch with me, and they were building a new house out on Pine Lake, and they wanted watercolors all throughout the whole house. So I did something like 34 watercolors for that house over about a year's period. And some of them were quite large, you know, and so it was a good way to spend COVID. I would be on Zoom during the day and then painting at night. And so it also got me thinking about, you know, probably if I wanted to retire, I could devote myself back to to what I started with art and kind of have time to learn. And I teach some as well. Actually, I've got a lesson later today that I'm teaching. But I've also started recently to do some oils, which has been kind of fun. I'm discovering, so what everybody told me, they are easier than watercolor.
It's so beautiful. So you were able to keep that practice throughout your whole career.
Yeah, I think when you start out, you know, as a creative person, you never quite lose that. You just, it comes out in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, and since I've started in that, I have so many friends that are my age or maybe even a little bit older, a little bit younger, who, you know, are very creative people, but started out in art and had a similar experience to what I did, where they had a professor that discouraged them or an art teacher that discouraged them. And, you know, and wound up kind of walking away from it, but came back to it in later life. You know, May Clish is a good friend of mine, and she came into art later, and she's doing great. She's, you know, winning awards, and she's doing the Sacagawea Award this year, or Imprint Award for Professional Dimensions. For that. And so, you know, I would say that most of us do have, we start out as creative beings. Just have people convince us otherwise. And I have a lot of people who will take lessons who say they cannot draw, they can't paint. And that it's not right. It's not true. I mean, if you can drive a car, you can draw, trust me. Yeah. You know? you can learn. It's all a skill that you learn. And it's the same way with watercolor. With watercolor, if you let the paint does a lot of the work for you, and that's the first thing to learn and the hardest thing to learn is to let it do the work for you. Accidents often become your favorite part of the painting.
Yes. Yeah. I was just on a retreat in New Mexico this year when we did watercolor. It was like a writing and artistry retreat. And it is, you're so right. It felt like you can't make a mistake because the mistakes become. We had another guest on the show who talked about a children's book called Beautiful Oops. Every mistake turns into this beautiful, it's beautiful. And I love what you said about creativity and us all being creative. It reminds me a lot of what Dasha Kelly, when she was on our show, she said, and this will stick with me for life, I think, because she said, you know, she was in a room and asked a bunch of people to raise their hand if they thought they were creative. And nobody raised their hand. And she said, you know, I think what you heard me say is, can you write or can you sing or can you draw or paint, you know, but no, like all of us are creative. Like you go through this world and, you know, that's what makes us human. We're creative beings. So that fact that you can come to this when you're ready for it, when it's ready for you, you know, and it doesn't have to be something that you've done, but I'm over 40 now, nearing pretty close to 50. And I'm getting really tired of the 40 under 40 list because, you know, I'm ready for like the 70 over 70 kind of list. You know, that's the one I want to be on when you figure it out, you know, when it's right, when you have the time and the passion for it.
Yeah. Making the time and making space too. I think that's the other thing when people decide to do art is that when you have to use the dining room table or the kitchen table and put it away every time, it kind of gets to be a chore. And I always tell people, if you can find room for a jigsaw puzzle to do a jigsaw puzzle and leave it out, you can find room for your art supplies.
I love that.
And I'm just curious, what's it like for you as a retired person? In my mind, like you're living the dream. You've made it to the promised land of, you know, retirement and doing what you love.
Yeah, I would say, so I got some good advice when I retired. A friend of mine said, you know, don't agree to anything for the first 6 months unless it's something you've decided in retirement you're going to do. And so I did that. And I was very glad because when you first retire, you get a lot of requests to do things. And I really, you know, they said have 6 months of vacation because that's really what it's like. I did take some online classes at that point and some in-person classes for watercolor. And I was always, and I made a commitment quite a few years ago to implement a park in Harambe on the Beerline Trail called the Beeline Park. And so we had started a capital campaign, and I talked to Joel Brennan, who's my successor at the GMC, and said, if you want, I'd be glad to be kind of the GMC rep on that, because I really want to see that happen. And I'm still working on that and have continued to work on that. And that's been a fairly significant time commitment. But it also has kept me active and in touch with people that I've worked with over the years, which is really cool. And, you know, I want to see that happen as well. I was also active with a group called City is Living Laboratory, which is an artist-led organization out of New York. And the artist is Mary Miss, who years ago worked on the first Riverwalk and is now active with a project in Milwaukee called Watermarks. So I'm on the national board, the call board out of New York, and still working with Mary. I co-chair the Watermarks project here with Marcia Saylor. And that's been fascinating because I've got to meet a lot of people from across the country that I would never known in that area before. And we had an immersion trip here to Milwaukee for about 22 people. Most of them came from New York. It was interesting. They came the day that the flooding hit New York City at the end of September. And because we're really a city of water. And so the Watermarks Project is really creating this atlas of water using these water markers throughout communities to kind of tell a story of community, but also to let people know what water is doing in their community and how they can control their actions around water. Cool. And so that's been kind of a cool project to be involved with too. And I also went on the MMSD commission recently, which is the Sewage District Commission. Because I've always been active in the areas of water. I've always been fascinated with that with Milwaukee and helped form the Water Council, and it was housed in the Greater Milwaukee Committee offices for quite a while. And we had offices, and we have had offices in the Water Council building. And so this is kind of a continuation of some of those passions that I've had over the years. But I've really kind of, I've done a good job, I think, of not getting overcommitted, trying to maintain the art practice, but also picking a few things to do that, you know, are things I just really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've slowed down, but not totally.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so basically in your retirement you're doing way more than I'm doing, and I'm full-fledged.
I don't think that's true. I'm just keeping a little busy.
I have a sister who's 18 years older than I am, and so she retired a few years ago, and it's the same thing. I'll call her expecting her, like, oh, are you sitting under the tree reading a book? And she's like, oh no, I'm running from this meeting to that meeting to that meeting. And I'm like, hang on a minute. You're not setting a good example for me in retirement.
I'm trying not to do that. I mean, actually, you can still control things. I try to keep most of my meetings on Mondays or Tuesdays, so the rest of my week is open. And
I've learned that there's days that I need to call her on where maybe she'll be reading a book, because right. I haven't called on her meeting day.
Too, but I try to ensure that I keep studio days clear on my, so I have time to paint and do what I want to do. And if I, you know, the fun thing is, you know, if Steve wants to go have breakfast or we want to go run around and do something, we do it. You know, it's like, I don't have to feel compelled to do things.
I feel like, Shelley, we could take a few lessons from that book now. Why wait till we're retired to start saying no to things that we don't want to do, that don't bring us joy? I mean, you know, there's some things you just can't say no to, but. We could start.
You'd be surprised why you can say no to that.
Yeah. Somebody once told me, be careful. What did they say? Something about volunteering, like, be careful what you're good at, you know, just because people will, even if it's not what you love doing, but you're good at it, you got to have that barrier, that boundary. So I'm working on that. Yeah.
Well, this has been delightful. We always like to end the episodes by shining a little love on Milwaukee and learning from our guests, what are places and spaces in Milwaukee that are specifically dreamy for you? So in kind of the spirit of rapid fire questions of like best place to dine or whatever, I would love to know, where is it that you and your partner run off to for a lovely brunch? What places are you?
Yeah, you know, we go for breakfast, not so much for brunch, but I would say the Cafe at the Plaza is one of our favorite places.
Oh, yeah.
And then Canella's on Downer, too, is another one. But, you know, we also like, I would say some of our favorites are like Lupe and Iris and Buckley's. And You know, I'm a big Lake Park fan, so we spend a lot of time in Lake Park too.
Where's the best place to see art in Milwaukee? And obviously we have the art museum, but are
We have
there
a lot
other?
of great, I would say the Marshall Building. I mean, we have a lot of great galleries. You know, I love David Barnett's gallery. It's so full of various arts and all the love. And it's one of the oldest galleries in Wisconsin. And David's got a great gallery. And then, but you go in the Marshall Building, there are so many different little galleries in there. The Portrait Society Gallery is, I think Deborah's always got very thought-provoking works in there, and it's a great place to go and meet people and talk to people as well. And then a lot of people don't know about this, but MARN, the Milwaukee Artist Resource Network, has a gallery on Broadway that has a great little coffee shop in it, and they always have some interesting work up too. Beautiful.
Hoops did a premiere there. Nicole Acosta was one of our guests, and she's
Great.
yeah, she I remember getting introduced to Marn through her. I'm curious, what about good places to sit and sketch in
I
Milwaukee?
would say the parks are great. Any park that you're around, the beaches, if you want to see people, are always good. And it, you know, it's sometimes hard to find a place to sit, but if you want to sketch people or activity, like the public market's great. If you can find a little niche there that you can hold yourself away in. You know, even like the Grand Avenue Mall with a food court now is or the food mall, I guess it is food hall is pretty fascinating. There's a lot of places where there's a lot of people, and it's always fun to go to those places.
I'm curious when you had to, if you did, as the president, if you ever had to get gifts for people out of town from Milwaukee, what's the thing that you would always send or that represents our city?
We used to always go and get cheese from the cheese master in Door County because this is always Wisconsin cheese. People love that. And there is also a couple of great stores. There's one that the Urban Milwaukee store has a lot of great stuff in there too to go pick things up that are Milwaukee based.
Oh, where's this? I don't know the store. I need to.
Oh, what street is it on? Milwaukee Street, I think.
Okay, that would make
The Colby Abbott Building.
sense. Okay.
And there was for a while on the Grand Avenue. It's not there now, but there used to be a store that was all Wisconsin and Milwaukee stuff too.
Very
Is
cool.
he now in the public market?
I think
There,
he is, yeah.
yeah. I'm forgetting the name of that store, but that might be where that store lo located.
Yes, I've seen that. I've seen that.
Well, beautiful. And then one question we always ask everybody is, who are women in Milwaukee that haven't already been named? And it seems like you know everybody. A Milwaukee woman that you really see as living her dream or doing dreamy things that maybe I'd love to know if there's anybody that you see as an up-and-comer dreamer.
I mean, have you had Emily Phillips on?
No.
Baird? She's and she actually, they have, she and her partner do awards annually called the Jackin Awards. And but she's a really fascinating person. And then another person for Baird is Mary Ellen Stanek. I don't know if you've ever had her on. She's, Mary Ellen's been an amazing person, I think, to help women get on boards, support, you know, helped launch Milwaukee Women Inc. And she was very helpful to me both at the YW and the GMC, and just a and she does a lot of women's gatherings in support of women.
Beautiful. Yeah, I feel like somebody has recommended her. Maybe Cecilia.
Yeah, Cecilia probably would have. Yeah,
Beautiful.
and Danielle Bly is another person. I don't know if you talked to her. She's a real rising in the corporate world. She's now an officer at We Energies Corporation, and she's on their board.
Yeah, we're hoping that this sort of this podcast becomes a game of telephone almost, you know, and women connecting other women, and we keep saying we'll stop doing this when we run out of women, but I don't think that's ever I
I
think
don't
this will
think you
go on in
will.
perpetuity. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a joy and such a pleasure to get to know you. Also to get to know you outside of of, you know, your storied career and your time in Milwaukee. And I feel like all of us, all of our listeners, Shelley and I have a great deal of debt that we owe you for all everything that you've done and all the pots you have had your fingers in and all the things you brought to life. So thank you.
You're too kind. Like I said, it's never a one man show, a one woman show. It's a group of women and group of people that decide to make change, that really create change. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure to meet you, even though it's been via Zoom, and hopefully we can meet each other at some point in person.
Yes.
That'd be lovely.
See if we can get on one of your dinner party invites.
Yeah, or maybe you should get all the people that have been on your podcast and have them to a little party or a dinner party. That would be an interesting discussion.
This is actually, we have been talking about wanting to do exactly that, because we think if we had all these women in one room together, the stuff we could get done for this city, you know, from all the angles, because really we've had, you know, chefs and writers and artists and poets and business leaders, just the whole round table, you know, to create a space at the table for all of these women would be, that's our dream. So fingers crossed. This is why I'm making that pitch deck and why we're hoping we can level up this year, maybe get some sponsorship or some affiliates or whatnot, so we can do cool stuff like that and bring these ladies together.
It's great.
Thank you. And quickly, your website for people to go to is
JuliaTaylorWatercolor.com.
Perfect. Thank you. Are you on socials at all?
Yeah, I'm on socials. It's under JH Taylor on Instagram, and it's I think it's just Julia H. Taylor on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Julia, for leading the way and for joining us today to give us some insight. I will be thinking about this for a long time. So thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, you guys take care. It's been a real pleasure. I've truly enjoyed this.
All right. Well, I just really loved that episode. It's new for us, I think, to talk to a retiree. And it's really fun to reflect back on somebody's life and career and the lessons they learned. There's some things in here I feel like I'm working on right now that is really timely for me to hear.
Yes. And she really did hit. We have a list of, I think, 7 lessons that, and we could probably add to it now after season 4, but from our previous seasons, 7 lessons that all of our guests articulate in some way or another. And she hit on them all. She hit on every single one of them, which of course wouldn't surprise me, but was just a nice testament to what it means to dream and what it means to live a life, live a dreamy life. And like she said, I mean, not everything was dreamy. You know, she talked about that big failure, which I was grateful for her sharing that, because that is huge too. And I think a lot of the reason we don't see more people living into their dreams because they're afraid of those kinds of failures, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I one of the lessons that she added, I'd say, is this idea of volunteering. Places where you see a lack of leadership, volunteer and step up, take some leadership, because nobody is ever going to knock on your door, tap on your shoulder. And say, you should lead this. You know, you've got to step forward. So that I thought was a really good one about volunteering. I really got the sense from her that service is a huge value.
And just how key relationships are.
Long-standing relationships were a big deal for her. I mean, childhood friends that are still good friends, the YWCA people she still vacations with. I loved that theme in here of just really focusing intentionally on relationships and building relationships over dinner.
I love that.
Yeah, there's some just real key. And I honestly, I think, Megan, that this is one way that women lead and that women work that can often be undervalued, is just that skillfulness in building and maintaining relationships. That's such important work in the world. And I loved that she really drew that out.
Yes.
So thanks again for listening, listeners. We're so happy to have you here with us.
Yeah. If you heard anything from this podcast that made you think of somebody in your life that could use some of this wisdom from Julia, would you do us the favor and forward this to them? We love it when people share our podcast. We also love it when people go in and leave reviews. In fact, we just got a review last Friday.
Ooh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, hang on. I'll tell you what it is. It says, Milwaukee needs this podcast, featuring people who dream big and put those dreams into action with a goal of making Milwaukee and the world a better place to live. Who knows? You just might be inspired to join them. Thanks, Keep On Dreaming 7. We love that. So, would you go on and leave us a review? That would be awesome.
Maybe you'll get a shout out in the show itself.
Whoop, whoop. Oh, until next week, Milwaukee.
Keep on dreaming.
Keep on dreaming. Okay, Milwaukee.
Guess what? We are spending more money than we have earned via our podcast by getting new music and buying swag. Can you help us out?
This is a labor of love, listeners. We do this because we love it. And we also love coffee.
We do love coffee. And actually, we don't really use the coffee money for coffee, but it's easier to ask for coffee than it is to ask for money. So will you give us coffee?
Would you buy us a cup? If you like our podcast, click the link in our show notes.
Or share this with other people.
We love that too.
Especially rich uncles. Or aunts. I should really stop saying rich uncles. Rich aunts, baby. That's who we want supporting the pod.
I mean, uncles are okay too. We also love reviews. So leave us a review. If you like the podcast, if you love these women, share it, like us, leave us a review.
What's your coffee order, Megan?
Half calf, please. I've had too much already.
I had a new one that I'm obsessed with, a Shakerado, which I totally thought was a McDonald's drive-thru order. It's apparently like a fancy Italian shaken espresso with sugar, and it's amazing.
Wow.
I had it at Vendetta Coffee Bar. So if anybody wants to buy me one of those or 10, I'm in.
Boom. Haven't dropped a boom in a while.
Oh, I have some fiber for that. I entertain us.
Okay, friends, and that's a wrap.